may not realize that the film Vikfar was funded in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities.
But not while you were working.
Not while I was working there, no. It was... People still ask me, even at the endowment, why is it that we funded this French film? And I have to remind them that studies of French civilization, anthropology, ethnography, whatever I can come up with, are traditional disciplines of the humanities, and that language studies itself, and that there are many good reasons to fund this. Plus, the fact was that the endowment and John Weiss and Lawrence Wiley and I felt that this was an absolutely unique chance to return to a place where a classic film had been made in 1944-45, and with the same director, do a new film, looking back at some of the same people, some of the same sites, following up with what had happened in a period of transition, which has been overwhelming in this part of rural France. There have been few periods in French history where a place like the Rouergue has changed so radically in such a short period of time, 35, 40 years, as since World War II. So it was seen as a unique project. The fact that Rouquier was going to direct the new film, that we would be telling a contemporary story nonetheless, these were the factors which persuaded the National Endowment to fund it. The making a film like Vikfar in a small place like Goutrens and Rignac in the Aviron, places which are about, if you look at a map, think of a map of France in your mind, about two-thirds of the way from Paris to the Spanish border, at the southern edge of the Massif Central, very remote place where you only go if you're wanting to go there. You don't happen across this place on the road to someplace else. You have to want to go into these hilly regions where the train is a single track where. In constantly going like this, where you feel sick after the time that you arrive because the train has been going back and forth.
Is there a train to Rodez?
There's a train to Rodez. There's the train to Saint-Christophe stuff, which is a mile from Trance. But it's what I'm trying to say is that it is a remote part of France. It is extremely rural, and it has been hit by a agricultural and economic revolution in the last 35 years, which is without precedent in this part of France. There's now, by the way, an airport in Rodez, and that is what really links now economically the Department of the Aviron with Paris, other than through this economically. Family links have always existed. The Rouergue has been a great supplier of people, of labor, to the Paris region in particular, but also to Toulouse and Montpellier. The making of a film like this was a very interesting thing for me, certainly a extremely important experience in my life, unlike anything that I'd ever done. In the first place, we were not dealing with people who spend their lives making films. The filmmakers, yes, but the subjects were, as they were in 1944-45, relatively naive as in terms of what filmmaking means. We were going on location with non-professional actors, some of whom, yes, had experience in 44-45, but that's a long time ago, and there were only two or three who were involved again. and yet we were using a crew of people who were coming from Paris region into this small village. One of the choices we made at the very beginning was to find people to be on the crew, which was going to be a small crew, by not that we couldn't have afforded a larger crew, which was also probably true, but we also wanted it was a conscious decision made to keep the number of people to the minimum so that we would not be overwhelming the people in these families or in these villages. The idea being that we wanted to upset their lives as little as possible, knowing all the while that the making of this film would be an enormous upset in the cultural life and daily life of these families. Second thing is that it's a family business affair. It's family matters, which became very, very important in the making of this film. Georges Rouquier, the director, is related to practically everybody who appears on the screen. All of the family troubles and joys of the last 40 years are somehow are constantly sometimes problems and usually advantages to the making of this kind of a film. In that when I was talking with people at Farbeek itself, at the farm of Farbeek, I could not know that perhaps in 1955 there'd been some terrific argument between Georges' wife and somebody else in the family. Those are the kind of details that a person in the family can know, but that I couldn't know directly. There was no particular argument there. There were many arguments, but that was not one of them. I only cited as an example. So walking into the middle of this essentially family circle and trying to bring out a film was a very complicated matter. I felt after making the film that working through the diplomacy, the family diplomacy between various branches of people who felt hurt because they hadn't been used enough in the film, people who felt prideful because they were given chief roles and were therefore looking down at other people in the same family. I felt after that my place really should be in Geneva at the arms talks. Solve all that in a weekend. those were very important matters that I had to concern myself with in terms of the feelings of a large family and trying to get everyone working to make this film. And that was no simple matter. Now the film that you have now seen is a highly composed film. It's a structured film, unlike most ethnographic documentaries which you may see. This was structured in advance. It tells a story which did not occur in all its details. It's a fiction to that extent. However, it picks up on real human relations. It picks up on real places and on actual characters who are trying to play no one but themselves, or perhaps if you think of it as someone like themselves. One of the wonders of Rouquier's direction is that he was able to get these fabulous performances from people who, for the most part, had never been in front of a camera before. And that comes from the fact that he had established a personal rapport between himself and each of the actors and actresses. They felt that they wanted to do a good job for Georges. He wanted to get a good performance out of them. He was asking them to play roles which were similar to their own in real life, and he was asking them to play these roles in their own living rooms, in their own dining rooms, in their own kitchens, so that they would feel the maximum ease. And again, the question of the crew came in, where we had to find people who would understand what Georges wanted to do, who wanted very much to work on this film, who would take no shortcuts in saying that the film was well made. It was a highly professional operation, and people worked very, very well together. The one thing we could not afford was fights among crewmen, people on the crew. It was very, very important to us to avoid all of that, and to avoid any feeling on the part of the crew members that they were somehow superior to these people in these very rural areas. Because the traditional differences between a Parisian and a someone from the provinces is certainly no more, I can't imagine, more distant than one could be possible between somebody who is a fancy filmmaker and a person who takes care of sheep most of the time. It's just very big class differences that we had to be careful of. And that's something that we looked again in terms of the makeup of the crew. And by and large, we were very successful. We also had another kind of problem to work through, and that's an interesting one in terms of filmmaking, and that is that that the people who work in agriculture in the Aviron have had a rather low opinion of what filmmakers, TV people, professional in the media might do for a living. Whether this was really work or whether they were simply being overpaid for a little bit of work. At the same time, the crew members had only minimal experience of what farm life was really like. So they, as I say, they're very sympathetic people, but nonetheless they came with a very limited idea of what's involved in the daily life of a aviron farmer. At the end of the film, I think, at the end of the filmmaking period, both the people who've been involved in the film as actors, that is the farmers from this region, the families, felt that the filmmakers were just as hardworking as they were. They were astounded by the long hours that they put in, the efforts made to have just a very slight effect. They were very impressed with that. At the same time, the crew members learned an incredible amount about agriculture. In the scene in the film where the artificial insemination is going on, I happened to be standing there holding a big piece of cardboard so that the light wouldn't be reflected. And so I was not watching the scene, which is actually, since I live in upstate New York, something I've seen before, I grew up here. But the crew members had never seen this sort of thing. And I was watching the crew, and they were watching what was going on. And I'll tell you, the drama was over there with the crew. But that's the kind of experience which these people had never had. And that was a very interesting part. What I would like to do is show you some slides of the making of the film and of this village. I think perhaps some of you are interested in what this place really looks like. We have limited view in the film of what a small French village looks like, and I do have a few slides of that which we can talk about. And then if you have questions, I'd be happy to answer them or say more about any particular subject that you want to talk about. This picture is taken in the market town of Rignac. At the beginning of the film, we shoot a market, the monthly market in Rignac. And this was the first time that I had been to there. This is Georges Riquet standing here, which we can get it darker here. I guess it's not visible. People in Goutrens, which is where we have actually, it's so clean I dare not touch it, but the Goutrens is basically here, Vignac, you can think of it as over there, Farbeek and Ikvar are here in between. So there's a road to Vignac and then a road off of that to Farbeek. Goutrens is a very small town, a few hundred people. It has no real grocery store, no market to speak of. So people go to Rignac for the market, and this is what they're doing in this here. And at the beginning of the film, we see some of the market scenes, and also it's the market day, not only because all these people come with their mobile vans to sell everything from cheese and sausage to vegetables and meat, everything they sell there. But it's also the day once a month when there's a major market for veal calves, for sheep, for lambs, for all kinds of animals. And this is an extremely important social occasion. People come in, they spend the day really at this event. The day of the market, school is closed in the mornings of that market day, so that everybody comes. And starting from, the market starts around 5:30. At 8 o'clock in the morning, you can go into the various restaurants in this sort of town, which there are several, and they're completely set up. All of their tables are already full of people having what you and I would think of as a pretty large lunch, if not dinner. And they're exchanging all the gossip, all the economic business, all family business, because everybody knows everybody in the region, and they're all passing this information back and forth. It's an extremely important social occasion. So, at the beginning of the film, they say they're going to, the one sister, Hortense, is going to the market, and she's going to pick up, do the errands for Maria, the kid, the fast. So that's where they're going. And this was the day that we'd gone to see what this market was, how, what it was like, whether we'd be able to film in this area or not. In this town, there is a major market building in which you see at the in the film, in which here we were investigating the first time as to how this might work. Interestingly enough, the mayor of Rignac, which is again a pretty small town, less maybe 1,000 people, I don't know the exact number.
It's 2,500.
Isn't that big? 2,500. Okay. it's still a fairly small place, but the mayor of Rignac is also a member of the Conseil Général de l'Aviron, the governing council for the Aviron department, and a senator in Paris. Okay, so he's a big guy politically in the Aviron. What this has meant for Rignac is that he has had a new market building built there, huge new market building, sheds for, more than sheds, it's kind of hangar kind of a situation, so that it makes the town of Rignac very important for its cattle market. a town like this otherwise would probably not have the economic importance that it does have. So the mayor of Rignac was an important contact for us as well. Politically, however, he's on the quite to the right, as opposed to Rouquier, who was somewhere to the left. And
the mayor Goutrens was also on the left.
The mayor Goutrens, on the other hand, was on the left. So we had to figure out how to balance these two mayors off and keep everybody happy and get the film done. Now, the mayor of Rignac, the premiere of this film in France was done in this market hall. Last March, a year ago, now, the mayor of Rignac introduced the film because this was a big political event for him. 1,000 people in the building watching it. But we had not allowed him to see the film before. He had kidnapped the film practically in order to get an advanced look at it. Because he wasn't sure how much he wanted to say, or to what degree he needed to protect himself politically, but we didn't allow him to see.
Is he elected?
The mayor is elected, right? Yes. The mayor is elected. So all the politics of that became sort of interesting.
That isn't the mayor there,
no,
that's a
no.
That's a cattle dealer.
One of the things that Rouquier did during this visit and subsequent visit was to take note as to exactly what these people did as they bought and sold cattle. And you see some of those gestures done in the film. Those gestures are by not at all directed. We did not ask anybody to do anything. We just filmed the conversations that were going on about particular sales. but at one point you see somebody with scissors who is making a little cut in the hair back here. They each have a little sign, which means this is a veal calf which I have bought. The little sign just says, this is mine, and I remember they mark it on a sheet of paper, but it gets a little difficult to remember at the end of a couple of hours which ones you've bought and which ones somebody else has bought, and make sure nobody is going to substitute some lesser quality animal for it. So they make little individual marks. And we watched also how they judged an animal's
condition, how they looked at them, where they would typically, for instance, sort of feel in this part of the animal, the rump here, and was to feel how much fat there was between the skin and the muscle. They can, and these kinds of things, that's the kind of detail which Rukier wanted to put in his film, which he had to understand, and which he got people to explain to us exactly what's going on. Now, it's impossible. This is the difference in film style between this market scene and later in the film is quite striking. Here, we were working with what was happening anyway. It was a market day. We went in and we shot with two crews, two cameras. Roughly the only time in the film we used two cameras at once. Two sound men running around and just getting whatever we could. We were just collecting materials, basically, to be used in the film. The rest of the film is all structured according and thought out in advance. We want so-and-so to be sitting here, we want so-and-so to be sitting there, we want them to sit this line. It's a very different style of filmmaking. This is much more like what you'll see in most ethnographic filmmaking, is where you run around in front of people. The action happening in front of the camera. On the other hand, the Avironnais who were in the film, who were in that market scene, were not necessarily duped by what was going on. And this is, I think, something which you should keep in mind if you're interested in filmmaking. And that is that you always, your presence as a filmmaker is, of course, visible to everybody. And you do have an effect on what people are saying. As I came out the day that we were shooting in here, not this day, this was when we first went taking notes, but when the day that we were actually shooting in that place, I heard two other farmers come out and they said, ha, he thought I was really giving him the figures there, but I wasn't. He was play-acting a little bit, because he didn't want anybody to really know what he was being paid for, an animal or something else. They were giving other figures. Imagine we were so interested in the exact details of the particular sale that we wanted. But they felt they had sort of triumphed over the filmmakers. And to some degree they have. But it really wasn't crucial to us. But if you were making an entire film where you were trying to, with what they call the direct cinema or cinema vérité style, you're constantly running into the problem where people are play acting a little bit because you're there, and they want to project a personality which is not really quite their normal everyday personality. So there's always a difference there. Now, just to show you something of the village of Goutrens. This is 3 miles on a very windy road from Rignac. This is what it looks like from the house where Henri Rouquier lives. Henri, our main character in the film. This is across the street. There's a pasture and then the village proper. But there's all kinds of houses behind me. So you have a situation very common in France in these small towns where you can have barns and pastures really almost in the center of the village. Not in the center of the village, but just on the outskirts before other houses. people have fields, pastures spread out among the countryside, and they may have their barn someplace else, so it's very, very common and somewhat dangerous if you're not expecting it to, in the morning or in the evening, to come across a herd of cattle or sheep walking along the road to get from their field to their barn. In the center of the village of Goutrens is a small square and the church and the war memorial, which is obligatory in French villages. This one was originally built for the 1914-18 war. And is painted face, painted mustache, and stands right in front, to the side of the church. On the other side of the square is a café, the Café Fraissinette. There had been a number of cafés in 1944-45. You get some image of that in the film, in the two films particularly. Now there's only one. So this was that statue.
Georges Rouquier's father is listed on the list of the dead from the 1914-18 war there, as well as in the church. And you have an image of that as well in the film Farbeek.
The church is now to our right. Café is here to the left, and this is just the main road which goes through Lutrens. It's certainly not a romantic looking village.
Well, the Cassagne part.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's a different part of the town lands.
It's about the least romantic French town, I think.
Right. So, gas stations, extremely important. There's a garage, an important garage in Lutrens, seller of used cars, who, by the way, gets a lot of his revenue from bringing used cars from the Paris region to Lutrens and vice versa. So, and repairing. He's well known as a auto repair shop. And as in all small towns, there's a political connection as well, that his wife is the secretary of the mayor and was, again, a key figure for us. So sort of figuring out how these villages work is an important part. This is a nicer view of Lutrens. In the film Farbeek, there's the house which the older aunt, La Tante Marie, lives in, who serves the children lunch at noon. They come from Farbeek to Lutrens to school, and because it's a mile home, they stay in the village at lunchtime, and the Tante Marie serves them lunch. And she lived in this little house here. It's very, very small. The main room in that place, if I were standing at one wall, the other wall would be where the door is. It's roughly from here to that wall. It's the entire space of that room. So filming in there in 1944-45 with these enormous cameras was extremely difficult. And you have the feeling in the film, because he has La Tante Marie pulling out the soup from underneath the mattress, or underneath the quilt where it's keeping warm, and serving it, bringing it over and putting it on a table. And it's in two shots. One, you see her taking the stuff out. Next shot, we see her putting it down on the table and saying, that's too good, you have no and you have this feeling that it's in quite a large room, and she takes it over here and walks over someplace. And in fact, she's going like this. That's the whole thing. And the illusion of space comes from the fact that it's two shots. It's filmed at a really wide angle lens in this place. That was one of the things that struck all of us coming from the outside to Lutrens and to Farbeek, is that everything, including the people, are diminutive. Everybody is short and small, and the places are small.
I mentioned in my lecture yesterday the basketball team they all desperately cheer for, that I can't imagine ever wins any games, the Aveyron basketball team, made up of 5-footers.
Lutrens, a byway in Lutrens, you can see the very narrow kind of roads which are in this village. A number of places are falling apart, however. There is an influx now of people into the village from Toulouse, Rodez, who are buying houses or buying back houses that were in their family for use as weekend or vacation places. But it's so remote from Paris or Lyon or Bordeaux that it's difficult for people to imagine buying a place down there as a vacation place. It's too far to go, it's too hard to get there. It's a good 8-hour trip by car from Paris. It's not expensive, however, so for the houses, for the land it is, but for the houses it's not too expensive. The result of this is that the people who are getting a little bit more bourgeois from Rodez, which is only 35-40 minutes away, may buy these places. That's a limited number of people who have the funds to do that, but there are some. Or from Toulouse, which is an hour and a half, they may, if they have some attachment to the region in particular, they may come and buy places here. This was a former cafe, and gives you, this is typical, where you have the, it's now used as a house, somebody lives there, but you can still see the old sign which said Café Auberge de Dos. It's one of the numerous cafes which have closed since 1945. Since people do not need to any longer be attached to this very small community, they go to Rignac, they don't necessarily work in the village anymore or on farms, they work in Rignac, they work in Vendez, because of the possibility of doing that and earning more money and having a better material life. On the other hand, if you look at the next house down here, you can see it has been re-plastered on the outside. So people are keeping up where they can. So not everything in the class is falling apart. Again, this is the street in Gautrin's. Again, that's Georges Rouquier looking in the window of La Tante Marie's house. We were talking about it that day. Lawrence Wiley was one of our consultants on this film. That's him on the right. Georges is in the center pointing out something or other. And Henri Rouquier, who is his first cousin and the main character in this film, is on his right, our left. These are the two cousins, Georges on the left and Henri on the right. This is at a time when this was the very beginning of this film project. Knowing whether or not it would be made was